Good afternoon, everyone. It's nice to have a little cool break, isn't it? Page 127 of the Ministry of Healing. The Spirit of the Lord says, "The only hope of better things is the education of people in the right principles. Let the physicians teach the people that restorative power lies not in drugs, but in nature. Disease is an effort of nature to free the system from conditions that arise because of a violation of the laws of health. Many are sick through ignorance because they don't even know what the laws of health are." Florence Nightingale called the laws of health the laws of nursing. In fact, she said that if a patient was suffering, it was the nurse's fault for not implementing the laws of nursing. She said the window should never be shut in the sick room because the first law of health is pure air. She said the patient should never be out of the sun. Did you hear that? She said the nurse has to keep moving it so that they're getting some sunshine. She knew. And the third law is abstemiousness. Nothing harmful should go into the body. A man emailed me. He said, "Barbara, I've been smoking for 40 years. I stopped smoking 2 years ago. Now I've got lung cancer. Have you had any cures from this?" I said, if you'd come to me 23 years ago, we might have been able to do something, but so much damage has already been done. Everyone I meet, everyone I know is managing something because we're not home yet, is that right? And if you can manage it, you're doing well. But there's one part of the body, and it's a part of the body we cannot see, and it's a part of the body that lets us know if it's not working well, but it's actually not part of the body. It's our gastrointestinal tract. What do I mean that it's not part of our body? Well, our gastrointestinal tract is a very interesting connection to our body because it is a hollow tube. And being a hollow tube, anything that goes into that gastrointestinal tract is not part of us until it gets broken down to tiny little substances absorbed into the blood. And what is the blood? The life of the flesh, as Leviticus 17:11 tells us. And yesterday we looked at what's in the blood to make it the life of the flesh. There's water, there's nutrition. And what I'm going to show you today, I'm going to take you on a journey through your gastrointestinal tract, your hollow tube, and I'm going to show you what happens to change what was on our plate at lunchtime to microscopic little particles that get absorbed into our life of the flesh, our blood. And then the blood, which is the carrier, the blood carries it to every part of our body to do what it does. Interesting concept, but a true concept. Our gastrointestinal tract is probably about 8.5 meters long. That's very long, isn't it? And yet anything that goes in there, remember, is not part of you or me. And what a wonderful lunch we had today. I think it was my favorite. My husband would have been happy. He's an Irishman. What does every meal, my main meal, have to contain? Potatoes. Oh, the French too. In fact, in my husband's view, a meal is not a meal without potatoes. So right now in our bodies, some of those things have already reached our blood. But I want to show you the exact process. And we're going to start with our mouth. Our mouth is the only part that we have say over. We have say over what goes in, yeah? We have say over how it goes in, whether half a cup goes in at one time or little teaspoons go in at one time. We have say over how long it stays in our mouth. Is that right? Do you know there are no teeth in the stomach? The only exposed bone in our whole body is our teeth. By the way, our teeth are an illustration of how much nourishment all our cells are getting, how much nourishment is getting into the blood to go to the teeth to make the teeth strong. So we have say over how long it's in the mouth. You know, it's a very good idea that when you've put food in your mouth, put your knife and fork down, chew very well. It's very easy, easy here. You've got such a most beautiful view out there. Is that right? I'll be eating and I'll look out and, oh, I'm almost in a trance. How beautiful is the view? That's why I like having a good view out of the dining room window. And chew 30 times. Have you heard the old saying, we should be drinking our food and chewing our drinks? We should be chewing our food until it gets like a cream. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen much. My husband's the worst. Everything my husband done is fast. Everything's fast. He drives very, very fast. And I have to tell you, I love it. He used to drive his aeroplane fast, his helicopter fast. And he eats fast. And so he says to me, why am I having so much wind? I said, I'll tell you, my husband. You're eating too fast. You're not chewing well. Remind me. And ladies, you should never nag because it never does any good, am I right? So I like to do it delicately. So we've got this little sign. We'll be eating and he'll be thinking about what he's going to do after lunch, you know, and all the things he's going to conquer because I've married a conqueror. In fact, when we had our honeymoon, we went to Tasmania. And when we were flying out of Tasmania, he said, well, done Tasmania, conquered it. He's a conqueror. So what I do is I just touch his hand and I smile and he goes, oh. He's a very decisive man. So we need ways, and that's why I think it's very important at the table, and this is the next point, we have say over the environment where we eat. And Ellen White says, cast off care and anxious thought when you sit to dine. Never should we discuss controversial issues at the table. And if I had a child or a toddler who started crying at the table, and I did have a son, I still have this son actually, his name's Peter, he's 33 now. But if the honey went on a piece of banana in his porridge pot, he'd cry. And if the spoon knocked the banana to go in the wrong part of the porridge, he'd cry. And as soon as he cried, ow, and out he'd go. I'd go to the door and say, are you going to be a good boy now? No. Okay. Shut the door. A few minutes later, are you going to be a good boy now? Oh, come in. You're always very polite to your children. Because when you're polite to your children, what are you teaching them? And if they're not polite back to you, out. You can come back, never angry, just decisive. We got to the point where we said, if you don't cry in the first 10 minutes of breakfast, you can sprinkle carob powder on your porridge. So he tried very hard then, very hard. Now, Peter is a Tyler today, and he's a perfectionist. So I think that's what was happening. The perfectionist was starting to happen there. So we've got mouth. You have say over what goes in. You have say over when it goes in. You have say over how long it stays in your mouth. You have say over the environment. That's the only place you have say over. And those decisions affect the whole of the 8 meters long. So it's very, very important, as you will see as we go down. Now, as the food goes down, it must be, before it goes down, it must be chewed very, very well. And some parents do the train saying, chew, 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 chew. Now, there are two foods that are broken down in the mouth, and most people aren't aware of this. So we've got mouth, and the pH in the mouth is alkaline. And one enzyme is released from your sublingual glands, which are under your tongue, and it's called lingual lipase. Now, whenever you see lipase, that's an enzyme that breaks down fat. But this lingual lipase only breaks down one type of fat, and that's saturated fat. And the best saturated fat is coconut. So coconut is unique in that the breakdown begins in the mouth. The other enzyme that's released is ptyalin. And ptyalin is a salivary amylase. And ptyalin is the enzyme that begins the breakdown of starch. But let me tell you something interesting about ptyalin, and it's something that most people are unaware of, because the great deceiver has deceived the whole world. Is that right? Revelation 12, verse 9, he says, the whole world. You see, that ptyalin, that salivary amylase, is not in the mouth until the molars come through in a baby's mouth. So the first teeth that baby gets are four at the front, four at the bottom, four at the top, four at the bottom. And those teeth are called milk teeth. You know why? That's all babies should have. Milk. Now, when a baby can sit, when a baby can pick things up and put it in their mouth and has a few of the milk teeth, that's when you give the baby a bit of cucumber, a bit of celery, so that milk teeth time is also taste time. That's all they're having is little taste. And you'll notice you'll give them a little bit of cucumber and it'll take them half an hour to get through about a centimetre, and by then you've finished your meal, so it's good. Or another good thing you can do is get a piece of apple and put it in a net bag and they'll suck away on that. Or you can cut all the corn off a cob of corn and give them that. They love that. That just fits into their hand. It's taste time. The molars, the grinders, they come through between 14 and 22 months of age. What do? Grinders grind grain. And when the grinders come through, then and only then is ptyalin released. And ptyalin is the enzyme that breaks down starch. So what does that mean? No baby should have any starch until the molars are fully through, which can be anywhere between 14 and 22 months of age. And what are mothers told to feed their babies between 4 and 6 months of age? Cereal. What's cereal? Pure starch. The great deceiver is at it again. And only a week before I left Australia, in the newspaper, it said that research is showing now that if you give babies cereal at 3 months of age, they'll sleep through the night. The great deceiver is at it again. Sleep through the night, won't be able to move because it's got this lump in its stomach, it can't even break down. I had a lady contact me, her little boy. We'll call him Liam. He was born early. He was born 3 months early. So this little boy is always, well, for the first few years, he's going to be a little bit tiny, especially for the first 2 years. This little baby's 10 months old now, and the mother said he's covered in eczema, his tummy's bloated. I said, what are you feeding him? Oh, I give him cereal and toast for breakfast, sandwiches for lunch, pasta. How many teeth does he have? Four. I said, can you please go to YouTube and have a look at my lecture called What Shall I Feed My Baby, where I go through the whole process. And she emailed me back and she said, oh dear. She said, what can I do? I said, is the baby still breastfed? Yes. I said, good. I said, just give the baby vegetables, just give the baby fruits. And she did. I got an email a month later, his tummy's gone right down and the eczema's clearing. Praise God. And I said, make sure the baby chews slowly and don't feed the baby until you've breastfed the baby. If the baby's hungry, they're going to want to eat anything. The breast is best. Remember, milk teeth. She emailed me 14 months later. She said, he's teething with his molars. They're starting to come through. But he stopped crawling. He'd started crawling. 14 months is late, but remember, he was very preemie. She said, he just wants to be held. He stopped crawling. He won't eat anything, just my breast. I said, not uncommon when a baby's teething. Not uncommon. I said, when the teeth come through, he'll feed again. He'll crawl again. Then I get an email a week later. What if the baby gets brain damaged? I'm thinking, where's this coming from? She said, what if the baby's muscles start to deteriorate? I said, why are you saying this? I said, milk is perfect at every stage in life. And 100, 200, hundreds of years ago, babies didn't eat till they were nearly two. Did you know that? Sometimes not till they were five. Then her father contacted me. He said, I am a scientist at Loma Linda University. My daughter listens to you, and I believe my grandson is going to be brain damaged. I want him to be taken to hospital and have some tests. And I also, my wife's a physiotherapist, and she believes his muscles are deteriorating. So I wrote back. And I said, and what are they going to do in the hospital? Huh? They're going to take blood. How traumatic is that going to be? And I said, and if they feel he needs more, are they going to put a funnel in his mouth and pour food down? And then it'll all come up. Or are they going to put an eye tube through? How traumatic is that? Or are they going to IV? You ever tried to find a vein on a baby's? And then the baby will get so distressed, maybe the baby will even stop breastfeeding because he's breastfeeding a lot. And I said, God made milk perfect for every single age. No milk does what breast milk does. It's perfectly designed in that first month for that developing brain. That's why it's so fatty. It changes at every stage. My last baby I fed till he was three. Do you know, at 3 years it was perfectly designed for a three-year-old. Does God know what he's doing? Yeah. And I said, so, a few hundred years ago, babies were not fed food. Do you know what that means? Einstein didn't get food till he was two or three. Galileo, Bach, Handel, Mozart. Oh, he says, I heard nothing more. A month later, I got an email from the mother. The teeth are through, he's starting to eat, he's crawling again. And then I got an email from the father, well, the grandfather. He said, thank you. He said, can I give you something? I said, oh, if you want, $400 in my account. That told me he was very, very thankful. And that told me also that he knew that what I said is true. Do you know those parents almost had that done to that baby because of this? Is this right? Fear. God says, I have not given you the spirit of fear. In 2 Timothy 1 verse 7, but of power and of a love and of a sound mind. A sound mind looks at the facts and makes their decision. So these are the two foods that are started in the mouth. Let's move down to the stomach. Stomach is the next organ. Now, as we go into the stomach, there's a little valve here. It's actually a double-layered valve. It's called the cardiac sphincter because of its relationship or nearness to the heart. And in the stomach, it's an acid environment. I think we all know that. Is that right? Do you know that? I hope you do. If someone says to me, I've got a very acid stomach, I say, fantastic. Because guess what? It should be acid. Did you know that dogs' stomachs are 10 times more acid than humans and they don't get reflux or heartburn? And if reflux and heartburn was due to too much acid, wouldn't all the dogs have it? You see my reasoning? No, it should be acid because acid breaks down protein, as we will see. So if someone does have heartburn or acid, acid's coming up here. Is the problem the acid? No. What's the problem? This valve. Is that right? But if someone has heartburn or reflux, what do they usually put on? Antacids. What's going to break down the protein now? To actually give someone antacids because they've got heartburn, it's like shooting all the horses because they keep running out of the gateway. Just shut the gate. Just shut the gate. So how do we shut this gate? Well, first of all, I'm having a look to see where I can put my why. Why is that muscle allowing food up? Something's weakened it. So when people eat breakfast like a pauper and lunch like a pauper and supper is king and queen together, then they lie down, what's happening? Gravity is causing that food to keep pushing against this and weakening it. And that is a muscle. Let me show you the muscle. Here's the muscle. Looks like this. And when it's relaxed, it's closed. And when it tightens, it opens. So when you're stressed out, do all your muscles tighten? Yeah. So stress can tighten it. But not only stress, it would have to already be weakened by eating late at night. Can you see that? So how do you close the muscle? One of the best muscle relaxants is magnesium. Everyone that comes to our health retreat with reflux, heartburn, they goes home without it. It's not in the bin. What do? We give them breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, and supper. It's just a thin soup, and we give them magnesium 4 times a day, 500 milligrams of magnesium citrate, morning, noon, evening, and just before bed to close that valve. Is it that simple? It is. And God meant it to be simple. I've met some people that they've had this heartburn reflux for so long that the cells lining the esophagus are ulcerated. How incredibly uncomfortable would that be? And if it is ulcerated, there's a herb called slippery elm. Slippery elm is the powdered bark at the slippery elm tree, and slippery elm, mixed with a little bit of water and drank, will line and coat and soothe that lining. So sometimes the person may need to have a little bit of slippery elm until that heals. So let's have a look at what happens in the stomach. The stomach's got big folds in it, like this. And these folds are lined with glands. And 2/3 of these glands release mucus. And mucus causes a thick mucosa lining on the stomach. And that is necessary, as you will see. And it's 99% water. So 2/3 of these glands release mucus. But way down here, they're called the parietal glands. They release a few things. One is hydrochloric acid. Another one that's released is pepsinogen. And pepsinogen and hydrochloric acid, they connect in the stomach and release pepsin. And it is pepsin that breaks down protein. Now the release... reason why pepsin's not released there is because pepsin could start to break down the lining of your stomach. So hydrochloric acid's released, then pepsinogen, they unite to release pepsin. And pepsin is the enzyme that breaks down protein. So it is protein that is broken down in the stomach. Protein and protein alone. Pepsin. Now, what's happening to saturated fat? Well, it's already having its breakdown. What's happening to the starch? It breaks down so far, when it hits the acid stomach, it's put on hold. But as you'll see, as we get further down, it starts up again. Hydrochloric acid, in my book, I've got a chapter called The Stomach's Secret Weapon, Hydrochloric Acid, because hydrochloric acid not only unites with pepsinogen to release pepsin, hydrochloric acid is antifungal, antibacterial, antimicrobial. So if you happen to eat food that has some yeast or bacteria on it, the hydrochloric acid will just wipe it out. Isn't that good news? Can you see why it's important that we have good hydrochloric acid levels? So why would someone have low hydrochloric acid? And by the way, I've met many who have that. How would you know you have low hydrochloric acid? Well, it's 6 to 7 hours and you still feel like you've just eaten. It's not getting broken down. You see that? Because hydrochloric acid's level's low. Well, why would they be low? Well, if you drink with your meals, what's that going to do to your hydrochloric acid, students? It's going to water it down. We should be drinking between our meals. Do you know, if you're thirsty straight after the meal, by all means have a few mouthfuls, even of a warm drink. That's not going to make a big difference. But if you have huge amounts of water with the meal, it will water down your hydrochloric acid. That's just a very simple scientific test, isn't it? What else would cause a reduction in hydrochloric acid? Stress. When you're anxious or upset, your brain just blocks the production of hydrochloric acid. And did you know that iron is bound up in food? And if you don't have enough hydrochloric acid, it can't release it from the food. So if someone comes to me with anemia, one of the first things I do is I have a look at boosting their digestion. What could also reduce hydrochloric acid levels is if a person's eating all day long, or if a person needs the main meal at the end of the meal, at the end of the day, sorry. That can all cause it. When I explained that in one lecture, one lady said, I do all that. I do all of that. Something else is released. Something else is released from the parietal gland. It's called IF. IF is the intrinsic factor. So I'm now about to give you the truth and the facts on B12. Isn't that a question every vegetarian has? Well, here's B12, and it's linked with an R protein in our food. And when B12 with the R protein gets into the stomach, the hydrochloric acid releases it. So if you have low hydrochloric acid, can you see what's going to happen? It won't be released. And then your intrinsic factor is released. So here's B12 that hydrochloric has just released from the R protein, and here's the intrinsic factor. Now they travel together all the way through the small intestine, and near the end of the small intestine, intrinsic factor and B12 unite. And only if B12 is united with the intrinsic factor can it be absorbed, and it's absorbed way down the end near the ileum. And then it goes into the enterohepatic circulatory pathway. Hepatic mean liver, and it circulates up and down between the liver. And some of it's used if it's needed, and if it's not needed, it just keeps circulating. Do you know that because of what I've just told you, someone can have no B12 in their diet and have no deficiency for 30 years? It's got nothing to do with whether you're a meat eater or not. What's it got everything to do with, students? The state of your gut, the state of your hydrochloric acid levels. The state of, or the integrity of your gut. Can you see how the great deceiver tries to get people to eat all day? Can you see how the great deceiver keeps them busy all day so they can't eat anything until the end of the day? Can you see how the great deceiver deceives people into thinking they're too busy to drink water, and when they sit down to eat their meal, they'll drink heaps? Can you see that? This deception of the devil has come into just about every area of our lives. And because it's a deception, we don't see it straight away. That's what a deception is. Appears okay. It appears okay. Now I want you to notice how many stomachs we have. Can everyone get a good look at that? One. Cows can eat all day because they've got 4 or 5 stomachs. But we've got one. And I know when I was a mother with all my little children at home, I didn't want to be in that kitchen all day long. So I made sure that my children had a breakfast that would take them to lunchtime. And I also discovered that when children say they're hungry, they're often bored, yeah? And sometimes it's thirst. I know my 15-year-old son, who was 15 at the time, he came to me one day and he said, "Mom, the water's not doing it anymore." I looked at my clock and I said, "Great, it's lunchtime." And you'll find when the water's not doing it any time, it's probably, or doing it anymore, it's probably time to eat. Now, to be able to keep the food in the stomach for the time it should be in the stomach, we should be having high fiber, because fiber slowly releases the glucose, generous amounts of protein, because there is only one food only that's broken down in the stomach. What's that? Protein. It's protein and healthy fats. So what are the proteins? The best proteins are the ones that God made. They're the plant-based proteins that God gave direction in the Garden of Eden. What did God say in the Garden of Eden? "Behold, I've given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth." What's a herb-bearing seed? That's your grain. That's your legume. That's your seeds. Pumpkin seed, sesame seed. And then he said, "In every tree in the which is a fruit-bearing seed." What's a fruit-bearing seed? That's a nut. And the last thing God said, "The seed, to you it shall be for meat." What's meat? That's the main substance. You see, nuts and seeds especially are high in protein. Fats, they're your good proteins and fats. They're the three foods that will keep your food in the stomach longer. Fiber, because it slowly releases the glucose. Protein, because it's in the stomach, the protein gets broken down. Fat, because it coats the food a little bit, so it takes a little bit longer. Much research has been done. I think we're all maybe familiar with the research that was done at Loma Linda University on nurses. They gave them a hearty breakfast. They tested their stomach contents half an hour before lunch, which was about 5 hours, empty. Half an hour before supper, empty. Next day, they gave them a biscuit, some of them an apple and a few nuts. Mid-morning, tested stomach contents half an hour before lunch, still had remnants of breakfast. You see, the pyloric sphincter is a little valve at the bottom of the stomach, and it has sensors. And it can sense when the food's broken down to the right state, and it'll start to open. And little by little, lunch goes through. Say our lunch is going through, pyloric sphincter's open. And let's say, most people in Australia, 4:30, afternoon tea. They'll have a cup of tea and a biscuit, or a cup of tea and a cake. Or maybe they're really healthy and they have an apple and a handful of nuts. Whatever it is, when it comes in, pyloric sphincter gets the message, "Shut the gate, something's just come in and it's not broken down." So that has to sit there in that warm environment, and that can often ferment, and then the wind starts to come up this end and sometimes out the other end, and the biscuit or apple or whatever it joins this, sensors say, "Right, you can open up now." Through it comes, but only an hour or two later, in comes the next meal. "Shut the gate, something's just come in and it's not broken down." You see that? Do you know what the research shows? That when someone's eating every couple of hours, the food, some of the food from breakfast can be still in the stomach 8 hours later. So no wonder the old saying, we should be eating breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, and supper like a pauper. Sometimes paupers don't eat. Now we come through the pyloric sphincter to the duodenum. Now, the duodenum is the first part of the small intestine. So in the duodenum, we've got quite a few things happening. Duodenum. Now, the duodenum is an alkaline environment. See, there's only one part of the gastrointestinal tract that should be acid. Can you see that? Actually, only one part of the whole body that should be acid. That's stomach. So in the duodenum, we've got a few things happening. We've got our liver with the gallbladder underneath. Now the liver, it produces bile. And bile is the enzyme that breaks down your unsaturated fat. So that's your polyunsaturated fats, your monounsaturated fats, found in abundance in all the nuts and seeds. But what you've also got coming in, see, there's the bile duct, and it comes down from the gallbladder and it connects with the neck of the pancreas. So here we've got pancreas. Now, pancreas releasing some enzyme in. So pancreas. And remember, these are all alkaline environment here. So bile comes from the liver. Pancreas releases pancreatic lipase. Now remember, lipase breaks down fat. So the bile breaks down the unsaturated fats to tiny particles, and then the pancreatic lipase further breaks it down. But the pancreas also releases pancreatic amylase. Remember, ptyalin is a salivary amylase. This is the pancreatic amylase. And as a pancreatic amylase, it finalizes starch. Do you remember I told you starch starts in the mouth, is put on hold in the acid stomach, and then pancreatic lipase breaks it down to its final stages. Pancreas does more. Pancreas releases something called trypsin. Trypsin is an enzyme that breaks down protein. Now, where did protein begin? Stomach. So it begins in the stomach and it's further broken down by in the pancreas by trypsin, and there's another trypsin called chymotrypsin. Now, I've got some very good news. There's no more difficult words. What I've endeavoured to do is make it as simple as possible. So let me just recap this. There's your alkaline. So the only two foods that are broken down in the stomach is a saturated fat, lingual lipase under the tongue, ptyalin, breaking down starch, if you've got your molars, that is. And then we come into the stomach, which is acid, and hydrochloric acid, and pepsinogen unite to produce pepsin, which breaks down protein. And then we come into the duodenum, and it's an alkaline environment. Did you know that your pancreas releases sodium bicarbonate to help bring it to an alkaline? Now, in the duodenum, you've got the gallbladder, which is a reservoir for the bile, and the bile is breaking, or it starts the breakdown of unsaturated fats. Then pancreatic lipase further breaks it down. Pancreas releases pancreatic amylase, which finalizes the starch digestion. Pancreas releases trypsin and chymotrypsin, which finalizes protein digestion. Whew. Now, students, we're coming to the grand finale. Because what's all this about? It's about breaking it down to the tiny little substances so it can get into your blood. Is that right? So all was this to get into your blood. By the way, before we look at the grand finale, which organ is the main organ of digestion? Pancreas. Most people don't realize that. Most people think all our food gets broken down in the stomach. Is that right? That's not true. In fact, most people that have pancreatitis, cancer of the pancreas, they die from malnutrition. Can you see why? If you've known anyone who's had these problems, they get thinner and thinner, and they die of malnutrition. Because what does the pancreas do? It does the final touches on the breakdown of all our main food groups. Can you also see why the coconut oil is such a remarkable oil? And if someone has gallbladder problems, liver problems, pancreatic problems, can you see the best oil for them is the coconut? Because the coconut, the breakdown starts in the mouth. So when the coconut comes down to the duodenum, it does not need bile, it does not need pancreatic lipase, because the breakdown has already begun. What an amazing oil. Yet what is the great deceiver? What's the message coming through the media about coconut oil? Stop the coconut oil, it's a saturated fat, it'll give you heart disease. It's a deception. How do I know? Let's look at Captain Cook landing on the South Pacific Islands. He was confronted with the most magnificent specimens of humanity he had ever seen. The men were tall, strong, agile, perfect teeth. The women were beautiful. And what did they eat every single meal? Coconut. White man said, stop eating the coconut. It's a saturated fat. It's going to give you heart disease. It's going to give you cancer. And what was their response? What's that? What's that? They didn't know. But white man bought 5 lethal whites. You see, the island people listened because white man freed them from many of very scary spiritual practices they were involved with. What Christianity brought freedom to those island people. So they listened. And white man bought 5 lethal whites, white rice, white refined flour, white sugar, white refined salt, and white cow's milk. And those 5 lethal whites are killing those island people. The average age expectancy is 58. And who gets blamed for that? Coconut! And what's the size of them? Huge! It's not the coconut. As I showed you yesterday and the day before, fat doesn't make you fat. What makes you fat? It's the high carbohydrate diet with lots of wheats and sugars, too much glucose, so it gets dumped as fat. That's the most dangerous fat. Yes, if your polyunsaturated fats are heated, it changes them and they can become dangerous. But the 2 fats that can bear a little heat is your coconut and your olive. And they're the 2 fats that have been used for centuries because women could extract it in their kitchens because they're extracted from the flesh of the plant. So let us now look at the grand finale of digestion. Most of your food should be absorbed by the time you get your food gets halfway down your small intestine. Shouldn't have that there. Halfway down the small intestine, all your food should be absorbed. And it will be if it's been broken down to those singular structures. And so lining this small intestine is villi. Looks like this, long villi. And there's a lacteal up the middle of the villi. A lacteal is part of your lymphatic system. And then over the villi is your blood capillary network. But something else comes into play here. Lining our gastrointestinal tract is a thick turf wall. Why do I call it turf? Because it's made of microbes. Now, when we were in our mother's wombs, our gut was sterile. Do you know what that means? No microbes. And when we were born, we were literally showered with our mother's microorganisms. And breast milk, especially in the first few days, it's rich with microbes. 18 months ago, there was a show on Catalyst. It's a documentary in television called The Gut Reaction, and they were interviewing an obstetrician. He said, we always thought God made a mistake putting the birth canal and the anus so close. And if you had a baby 40 years ago, you had to have an enema when you first went into hospital Because when the birth canal opens, guess what else opens? That other canal. And he said, we don't want the baby to have anything from there. Do you know what he said? We now know it's a perfect design. Because when the birth canal opens and the whole area stretches, the anus opens and the baby's face hits the air and the baby goes, ah! And what's that first breath laden with? Microbes, and the baby swallows. So the swallow takes it down into the gut, and then in the first half hour of life, that baby should be put straight on the breast. Did you know that's when the sucking instinct is the strongest? First hour of life. I had the privilege of delivering my fifth baby myself. They thought I had a long time to go, and I'd already had a few home births, so I saw how it was done. I massaged the perineum and I breathed, and that baby's head just fell into my hands. It was an amazing experience. And I was in a hospital that time because I was way up in the mountains and no midwife had come way up that far. And a nurse with a mop and bucket, nurse's aide, came into the room, and there I am sitting there with the head. The mop and the bucket went flying. She ran, and all the nurses came in and they went, oh, and I'm just sitting there with the head, because then you wait for the next contraction. She said, do you mind if I check if the cord's around the neck? I nodded. And then I get my next contraction, and she went to take the baby. I said, I will deliver the baby. I'd done the hard bit. And I put that baby straight up onto my chest and cried because it's so wonderful. And then I put that baby straight onto my breast. That's when the sucking instinct is strongest. Now, the milk doesn't come in for 3 days, but in that breast is this thick yellow substance that is incredibly rich in microbes. And did you know that it's in the gut under the influence of the microbes that our immune system is built up? There's a huge amount of research going into the microbes today. They're starting to acknowledge the value of those microbes. Do you know what they're finding? Babies born via cesarean section have skin microbes in their gut because they didn't get to breathe in that lovely air down below. Incredible. So what do those microbes do? Why am I talking about that now? Because this is the point of entrance out of the gut and into the blood. And that entrance is influenced by those microbes. Those microbes now play four roles. Those microbes are responsible for the breakdown, the final breakdown. Now, we've already had our major breakdown. So it's basically putting the finishing touches on the breakdown. This is when the vitamin Bs are actually released under the action of those microbes. These microbes are responsible for the proper absorption. It's T-I-O-N. The proper absorption, not sure if that's a B or a P, so it'll be both. Those microbes are responsible basically for the travel of these microbes across into the blood. These microbes are responsible for protecting the blood. Protection. Students, this is our border protection. Can you see God put the hydrochloric acid up here to kill any harmful pathogens that might be in the gut? Oops, hydrochloric acid's hardly there. That's all right. We've got something else down here. We've got another point of entry that's carefully guarded. Can you see that? Do you know what it also does? It nourishes the cells that lines the gastrointestinal tract. And those cells are remade every 5 days. They start here, travel up, and then away they go. How important are the microbes? Now, if someone has antibiotics, and as I said the other day, I'm not against antibiotics. They save lives. But most people should only have about 2 courses in their whole lifetime. Many people should go through their whole lifetime never having them. My son James is 40. He has never had one. Most of my children never have, because they grew up in a home where they knew natural remedies. Mm-hmm. Antibiotics kill the good guys and the bad. Statin drugs, your cholesterol-lowering medication, and I hope yesterday I totally blew the myth to smithereens that cholesterol and saturated fat cause heart disease, and I showed you there is no proof. Now, I did write many books written by many cardiologists on this board. It was over in the corner. If you missed that, I'll do it again, because it's important for you to have the facts behind you. So your statin drugs, your cortisones. Do you know, in a crisis, a cortisone can save a life? But then very quickly, they should be looking at easing off that one. Contraceptive pill. That's also good at breaking down the microbes. Now what have we got? We've got a gut now that's compromised in the breakdown, compromised in the absorption. We've lost our border protection. So things can get into that blood that should never be in that blood. And the little cells that line the gastrointestinal tract have lost their nourishment. Do you know what Hippocrates said, called the father of medicine? All disease begins in the gut. And he did not know what I have shown you here. He just observed. So the million-dollar question is, how can we heal that gut lining? You can buy probiotics. Probiotics means for life. In fact, we sell a powder. I think it's got 5 million lactobacillus and 5 million bifidus. Bifidus bacterium, lactobacillus acidophilus. I am speaking English. But you look at most traditional food in just about every country had cultured food. You've got your sauerkraut from Germany. You've got your sourdough breads. You've got your misos through Asia. They use those cultured foods. Kefir. You can get a very nice yogurt now. Coconut yogurt. Have you tried coconut yogurt? So they are good maintenance doses. But if someone has compromised gut through long-term antibiotic use, they need to actually take a powder. 3/4 of an hour before breakfast, so it'll go all the way down. Because when you wake up in the morning, your pyloric sphincter is open. So when you drink warm water in the morning, it goes, some's absorbed through the stomach and it goes down. So that's the best time to have it. And there are 2 herbs that are a little slimy, because the lining of your gut is like the inside of your lip, a little bit slimy. There are 2 herbs that God has made. Remember Psalm 104 verse 14? God gave herbs for the service of man. One is aloe vera. Isn't aloe vera just like the lining of your mouth? It's a little bit slimy. So aloe vera can coat, soothe and heal the lining of the gut. And aloe vera has a growth stimulant. You cut the leaf off an aloe vera plant, how long before the cut seals? Very, very quickly. It's because it's got a growth stimulant. The other herb is slippery elm. The powdered bark of the slippery elm tree. You put that with water, it goes a little bit slippery. Have you noticed? You know, there is a way to mix it without getting lumps. You pour boiling water into it. It'll go smooth. Then put a bit of cold water in and you can drink it. It's almost tasteless. Slippery elm and aloe vera both contain growth stimulants. Did everyone get that? This is stem cell in nature. Am I right? You don't have to pay a fortune and get a stem cell implant. These 2 herbs both contain growth stimulants, so which means they stimulate rapid healing in the lining of that gut. And there are 3 foods that act like kerosene to a fire on those little naked spots. One is the hybridized wheat. Yesterday I showed you how The wheat has been changed. It's not the wheat that God made. So in that beautiful story we heard this morning about Jesus feeding the 5,000 with the bread rolls, but actually what sort of rolls were they? They were barley rolls, is that right? But even the wheat in Jesus' day, it was a healthy wheat. It's not the wheat that you see today. And did you know all the wheat was either unleavened or sourdough? The Israelites in the desert, when they celebrated the feast of the Passover, what did they have to put out of their houses? Leaven. What was the leaven? It was the sourdough. That's how bread always has been traditionally made. And you know, well-made sourdough bread will be light and sweet. Bread should never be sour and heavy. And as I showed you yesterday in the lecture, when you make a sourdough bread, it's a cultured bread and it breaks down the protein or the gluten in the grain, so it's easier to digest. So the three foods that act like an irritant to the lining of the gut are wheat, the hybridized wheat of today. Can you get a non-hybridized wheat? You can. It's called spelt or inkhorn or kamut. They are three varieties from the original grain. So what irritates the lining of the gut? The hybridized wheat, dairy. Do you know cow's milk is excellent milk for baby calves? Got that? People say, what milk do you drink, Barbara? I say, I'm weaned. I eat food. I have teeth. And if you'd like a little milk on something, we've got some wonderful alternatives now. Soy milk, as long as it's organic and non-GMO. Because God made the soybean. A friend of mine did a thesis on soybeans, and her students would say, tell us the soybean story. She said, I can tell it to you in one sentence. God made it good, man mucked it up. And can't you say that of wheat? God made it good, man mucked it up again. In fact, the research in Australia shows that 60% of Australians are intolerant to milk. Now, if it was raw organic milk, that'd bring it down to about 30%. I'm a fifth generation Australian, Scottish descent. I can't handle milk, never could. But if my history was in Scandinavia on dairy farms, I could probably handle a little bit. It is just safer to eliminate it because God has said in nuts, seeds, grains, legumes, fruits and vegetables are all the elements that we need. What about B12? Well, as you can see, the most problem with B12 is the gut's not working. In his book, Proof Positive, Dr. Neil Nedley, you're familiar with Neil Nedley? He shows in there that there's B12 in organically grown root vegetables. He also shows that you can get B12 out of organically grown fruits. You pick an apple off a tree, you're getting B12 because it's an airborne bacteria. And as I showed you, that we recycle a lot of our B12. So hybridized wheat, dairy, and refined sugar. There's no need for anyone here to eat refined sugar because you live in a place that has the most wonderful, my favorite sweetener. What is it? Maple syrup. Yes, it's expensive, but it's probably four times more expensive for us. We average probably $10 for what you'd say 8 ounces in the supermarket. On special, sometimes you can get it for $6.50. Yes, we have honey. Honey's also an unrefined sweetener. I don't put honey in my cakes or my apple strudels or my apple pies because it overtakes it a little bit. I use maple syrup for that. But we can get honey quite cheap, but I prefer maple syrup. But when my son visits with all his grandchildren, or my grandchildren, his children, I hide my maple syrup and pull the honey out. But when I make, and you see, food should be good. Isn't that right? Who doesn't like homemade apple pie, apple strudels? You can make delicious foods. What do I use for pastry? I use spelt. And if the spelt you buy is quite heavy, get some white spelt. Have half white and half wholemeal spelt. It'll still be better than anything you can buy, and it'll make it a little lighter. So my pastry, it's usually 2 cups of flour, half a cup of water, half a cup of olive oil. And you might say, doesn't olive oil overtake it? No, because when you heat it, it takes that strong olive oil flavor away. And if you mix up lemon and crushed garlic and olive oil and salt and put that in a jar in the fridge, refrigerating takes the strong olive oil taste away. My children put olive oil on their bread for 5 years before I tasted it. Why didn't I eat it? Well, I was brought up with butter on bread, and I wasn't used to this olive oil, but I just knew it was good for them. Do you know, parents, whatever you introduce your children to eat, that's what they'll eat. You have a look at a one-year-old, an 18-month-old. They'll eat a caterpillar. Am I right? So what changes? Can you see what I mean? They'll eat anything. So who dictates the tastes of our children? We do. And a lady said to me once, you must spoil your grandchildren. And I just smiled sweetly because I knew she wouldn't like my answer. She pushed me. She said, you must spoil your grandchildren. I said, no, no. What does spoil mean? Ruin something beautiful. So when my grandchildren come to stay, they love getting in the kitchen with me. I'll peel the apples and they chop them up and they help me roll the pastry. And then after they've eaten all their veggies and all their lentils, then we can have hot apple pie with coconut cream on. See, food should be good, should be wonderful. How often does food taste good but it's killing us? Or how often the food's good for us if you can get it into your mouth? And most people make food that is tasteless and boring because they think salt's bad and oil's bad. Is that right? Salt and oil make food taste beautiful. Now, there's only one oil that can really bear heat, and that is the coconut oil. Because the coconut oil on its molecular structure has no empty spots. It's heat resistant. The olive oil has a little. I put olive oil in at the end of my cooking. When I've cooked my lentils, I put it in just before I serve. When I do a stir fry, I put it in just before I serve. Our cook's Fijian, and she steams potatoes, and then she lightly coats them in salt and coconut oil, and then she puts them in a high oven. They're crispy and golden brown and beautiful. They're just like wedges. Food should be good. Too long, food has not been good. Is that right? And we need to win our children with beautiful food. I used to make my children dessert twice a week, sometimes 3 times a week. I would teach them from a young age to come in the kitchen with me and cook. In fact, see, I had 6 children up in the rainforest. Each child had a day where they were cook, and they could choose the menu within reason, of course. Now, if we had a lot of cauliflower in the garden, they needed to include cauliflower. Well, they could have cauliflower au gratin, or they could have cauliflower curry, or they could have baked cauliflower. Have you ever tried baked cauliflower? That's delicious. Or they could have cauliflower salad with an avocado sauce. That is delicious. So they would choose, but I would direct them. So they're all proficient cooks. They're all proficient gardeners. Do you know, isn't that the role of us as parents and grandparents, is teaching the children? So let's come back to our grand finale of digestion. Can you see how important those microbes are? And so halfway down the gastrointestinal tract, all our food should be absorbed. All that's coming out now is fiber. And fiber is very important because fiber, especially from vegetables, that's why your plant foods are so important, It feeds the good bacteria that's living in your colon. Now, let's say the person's eating all day long and drinking with their meals, and their hydrochloric acid is low and they're stressed out all the time. Then microbes came in on the food, and you can't see them with the naked eye, can you? Especially rice. Did you know that rice will mold within 24 hours and you cannot see the first signs of it? So rice should be cooked fresh every day. So it's perfectly all right on Sabbath morning to put it in your rice cooker. Is that right? And have it ready for lunch. So when I go to a luncheon at a church, I won't eat any rice dishes because they're usually cooked the day before. If you cook too much, freeze it, not a problem. Did you know in 1921, Japan passed the Rice Act and put stringent rules on the storing of cooked rice because there was an epidemic of cardiac beriberi that was wiping through Asia. It was a heart condition and they traced it to the mold on the cooked rice. So in 1921, Japan passed the Rice Act that put stringent rules. So you had to discard rice after 24 hours. This is even in the fridge. Cardiac beriberi was wiped out. That's one of the stories that I have from some of the books I have showing the mold link with disease. So let's say the protein doesn't get broken down here because the hydrochloric acid's low. So it comes down to the duodenum. Trypsin and chymotrypsin look at it and say, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be already half broken down. And protein said, well, nothing was happening in the stomach. And so trypsin and chymotrypsin do the best they can, but they can only half break it down. And so half broken down protein is getting down here. It can't be absorbed. And so it goes all the way down into the large intestine, and the large intestine says, what are you doing here? And they just go, sorry, there's problems up above. And so extra bacteria has to be made to try and calm this down and deal with it. And what that can do is that can start eating into the lining of the small intestine, sorry, large intestine, where in the large, this colon. Do you know what research is showing now? Long-term antacid use is causing colon cancer. Can you see why? Food's not getting broken down, so the body has to adapt and adjust and create other things to try and help this, but that causes other problems. We had a man come to our health centre, 25 years he'd been on Nexium or the equivalent. Is it working? 25 years? Do you know what he did? When he heard this, he stopped his Nexium and he started having a quarter of a teaspoon of cayenne pepper in a little bit of water before every meal. What's cayenne pepper going to do to your gastric glands that produce your enzymes? Do you know one of the wonders of cayenne pepper is it brings blood. And when you bring more blood to the lining of the gut, that's what feeds the production of your enzymes. He is so happy. He said, 25 years I've been on this. His girlfriend did our program a year later. She said he is so happy. He's off that Nexium and he swears by his cayenne pepper. Another thing you can do to boost your hydrochloric acid is to have the juice of a lemon in a little hot water just before your meal. Because remember what lemon is, it's acid. Most of the dressings that we serve at our health centre contain lemon. What about apple cider vinegar? There's quiet in the room. A lady contacted me recently and she said, Barbara, we've always thought vinegar's bad. Now it's supposed to be good. What's going on here? Would you Google on the internet Dr. Robert Young? Dr. Robert Young, he has just posted an article on vinegar and it's an eye-opener. Dr. Robert Young and apple cider vinegar. You get a whole article on it. And what he shows is that vinegar is acetaldehyde. And when the liver breaks down alcohol, it breaks it down to acetaldehyde. And acetaldehyde is not broken down easily in the body, and it's a neurotoxin. Oh, the great deceiver is at work again. Is that right? We use apple cider vinegar to put on people's toes if they have a fungal infection between their toes. That's it. That's the only reason we use vinegar. And yet you have a look at the things that are coming up through about vinegar. They're hailing it as a wonder food. It is not. It's actually a neurotoxin. What else produces acetaldehyde is not only vinegar and the breakdown of alcohol, but if someone has candida, the breakdown of the sugars produces acetaldehyde. Cigarette smoke, car fumes, acetaldehyde. Only small amounts there compared to the others. What I'm giving you is the facts, but search it out. What did the Bible say? What does the Bible say in 1 Thessalonians 5:21? Prove all things and hold fast to that which is good. God wants us to test it and prove it. But as I showed you in the story of my plantar fasciitis, 10 months to recover. I did hot and colds twice a day and it recovered in 6 months. And the young man did it for a week and said, "It's not working, I'm not better." So there's a four-letter word there, time. Is that right? Sometimes we've got to wait. I'm a bit impatient with this hand, but it is improving. I've just got to wait. It's going to take time. Is that right? You had a question?
Yes. Can you clarify about the apple cider vinegar?
Okay, clarification on the apple cider vinegar. Apple cider vinegar is acetaldehyde, which is a neurotoxin. And when a person takes alcohol in their body, their liver breaks that down to acetaldehyde. So when you take apple cider vinegar, it's very similar to you actually drinking alcohol. So am I saying it's good? Well, it's not what I say, it's what is. Is that right? But if you Google Dr. Robert Young, apple cider vinegar, you'll get his whole article and you'll get all the science. He quotes the research and he shows exactly how it interferes with brain function. So we're moving on down the gastrointestinal tract, the small intestine, and then it comes into the large intestine through the ileocecal valve. And when it comes out of the small intestine into the large, it's liquid. One of the main functions of the large intestine is to take water out so stools are formed, so we can pass with ease. But notice down the bottom here, there's a little tiny organ called the appendix. Did you know that God didn't make a mistake? He never makes a mistake. The appendix has two main roles. One is it's called the colon's oil can because it lubricates the contents of the colon. And the other thing the appendix does, it releases antibacterial fluid. Because for some people who are eating high meat, which putrefies, and high sugar, which further feeds the putrefaction process, when it comes out of here, it's toxic. And so very quickly, the appendix is releasing antibacterial fluid to try and calm it down so it won't hurt you to get it out of the body. Dogs can eat meat because they're gastrointestinal tract is probably only about a meter and a half long. How long's ours? 8. That's why the countries in this world that are the highest meat consumers have the highest incidence of colorectal cancer. I was reading in America that it's number 2 killer, colorectal cancer. And of course, meat has no fiber. And did you know that it can get stuck in these little corners? You ask any colonic irrigation therapist. There's stories of people having colonic irrigation and a piece of meat comes out and they haven't eaten meat for 10 years. It's a bit scary, isn't it? Bit scary. So coming in here, the main function of the colon is to take water out so stools are formed. And notice all the grooves. So we need a lot of fiber. Fiber sweeps the colon. Fiber gently stimulates peristalsis all the way through. Dr. Kellogg said 3 intakes of food should equal 3 evacuations. He said, if you go once a day, you're constipated. Well, that's an eye-opener. We had a psychologist do our program. She went once a week with help. I said, we'll get you moving. We're putting castor oil compresses on her abdomen. It penetrates very deep and can break up. If you go to my lecture on YouTube, Barbara O'Neill Poultices, I demonstrate that. We also have a colonic irrigation system. So we gave her a couple of colonic irrigations, but we also gave her a herb tea. And this herb tea is in the back of my book. It's called the colon tea. It has Socrata, licorice and buckthorn. And it gently stimulates peristalsis in the colon. What did God say in Psalm 104, verse 14? He gave herbs for the service of man. That's what these herbs do. So she started to go two or three times a day. Do you know, by the end of the week, the whites of her eyes were no longer grey, they were white. Her skin became pink. She said, my mind is so clear. She said, maybe this is the problem with half my patients. What is she? Psychologist? It's true. Our whole body is affected by what happens in here. So she started moving. So what happens when she leaves us? She told me she took three teas a day and that got her going three times a day. After 1 month, she started going five times a day. So she brought it back to two cups a day. After a month, she started going five times a day. So she brought it back to one cup a day. After a month, she started going five times a day. So she stopped the tea. She said, I think it took her about 4 months. Her colon is moving now without any help. Praise God. See, we were designed to heal. And the herbs work with the healing processes in the body. Now we come down to the last part of the colon. Can you see a little red circle that I've drawn here? If I was strong, I'd just lift it up for you. That's called puborectalis, and puborectalis is a muscle, and puborectalis holds up the last part of the large colon. And we're very glad for puborectalis because it prevents accidents. Now, when you're sitting on the throne, puborectalis remains taut, but you can see there's room to get through. But when you squat, so how can you do that? You can have a little stool before the throne, or you can go to Bed Bath & Beyond and buy Squatty Potty. And Squatty Potty is a stool that wraps around your throne so you can mimic the squatting position. When your knees are up like that, puborectalis relaxes. And when puborectalis relaxes, the colon opens and you pass the contents with ease. And when I was in Delhi 3 months ago, I stayed in an apartment. It was a very beautiful apartment. There was so much marble there. And I had my own bathroom, all marble, and there is the toilet, and it's a hole in the ground. It's all flush and tile and everything. And when I was in Singapore 6 weeks ago, and I went into a shopping mall with my host, and you went into the bathrooms, and here's the western side, and here's the Singapore side. And the western side has thrones, but the Singapore side has holes in the ground. In African countries, Indian countries, Asian countries, in many countries today, they still squat when they evacuate every day. Science is now showing it's a superior way to go. And so many people have colon problems. Now, if a person's sitting and puborectalis is still caught up and they haven't gone and they decide to move things along a bit and put pressure there, it puts incredible pressure on the anus and things can pop out, nasty things called hemorrhoids. So when you squat, you can prevent hemorrhoids, and when you squat, you can help to heal the hemorrhoids.
Mm-hmm.
What about if there's another problem called irritable bowel, Crohn's disease, colitis, gastritis, which is inflammation? To heal that, and I have seen many heal from it, number one, take a probiotic. Number two, take the Slippery-Om. If a person's going 10 times a day, they can take Slippery-Om every half hour. Once they slow down, what do? Back off a bit. You see, you're the doctor there. Listen to your body. We've been having some wonderful meetings about listening to the callings of the Holy Spirit. Do you know the Holy Spirit will tell you what to do with your body?
Mm-hmm.
Because we are all connected, is that right? And you might find that your mind will be a lot clearer to communicate with God when your gastrointestinal tract works a little better. And tomorrow I'm going to go to headquarters, which is the mind. And I'm going to show you how the great deceiver is working furiously. He knows his time's short to take down the part of the brain where God communicates with man. So if the person is overgoing, irritable bowel, colitis, Crohn's disease, number one, take a probiotic. Number two, take the Slippery-Om. 2 hourly if necessary. As you start to slow down, slow off it. And there are 3 foods that irritate: hybridized wheat, dairy, and refined sugar. Before we close, let me give you a story of a lady that came to a meeting I did in New Zealand, and I did the presentation as I have done with you. After the presentation, she came up to me. She said, "I have had Crohn's disease for 30 years. She was 70. 30 years. She said, "What you've told me tonight, I have never heard." What does page 127 of the Ministry of Healing say? The only hope of better things is the education of people in the right principles. So she went home and she implemented this. This was Tuesday night. She stopped the wheat, the dairy, the refined sugar. Isn't the average diet contain all of those? She said, "I started to take Slippery-Om." She said, "I started to take the probiotic." Thursday night, so watch this, 48 hours. At the end of the lecture, she came up and she was just smiling. She said, "I've stopped bleeding from the colon." She said, "I have no more cramping pain. And I'm not going 6 times a day to the bathroom." She said, "I'm only going 3 times a day," 48 hours. 30 years she suffered. 30 years. Many are sick through ignorance. You don't need to know much to share this. If you can't remember all of this, it's on YouTube. Watch it again and again and again. Get a whiteboard, draw it up, present it. It's one of the most popular lectures because people don't know what's going on in there. Mm-hmm. But you can see what's going on in there. It affects our eyes, affects our teeth, affects our bones, affects our mind. Proverbs 14 verse 6 says, "A scorner seeketh wisdom and findeth it not, but knowledge is easy to him that understands." God wants us to have an understanding of how our body works so that we now have the knowledge on how to treat it. And page 347 of Christ Objects Lesson states, "Transgression of physical law is transgression of the moral law. For God is as truly the author of the physical law as he is of the moral law. He has written his law with his own finger on every nerve, every muscle, every faculty, every stomach, every colon." Sorry, I'll put that bit in. "With which we have been entrusted." It's a trust. Are you looking after your trust? All should become intelligent as to the human frame and how to keep it in the condition necessary to do the work of the Lord. The relation that exists between the physical organism and the spiritual life is one of the most important branches of education, and I'd like to suggest the most neglected. Here's the last sentence. The physical organism should be carefully preserved and developed. The gastrointestinal tract, my words, should be carefully preserved and developed. And then she tells you why. That through humanity, the divine nature might be revealed in all of its fullness. And in page 29 of Council on Diet and Food, and that's the first book I was given as a 23-year-old hippie. And I read Council on Diet and Food and thought that makes sense, and I did it. First book I was given. This is what she says in page 29, my last sentence. It's a good one. The erect form, the firm, elastic step, the fair countenance, the undimmed senses, the untainted breath, all so many certificates of good habits, insignia of the nobility with which nature honors those who are obedient to her laws. Insignia of the nobility. Let's bow our heads. Father in heaven, thank you for the privilege, yea, opportunity, to be able to be witnesses for you on this planet. I pray we each are inspired and encouraged and enthused to take better care of the wonderful trust that you have given us in this human body. Thank you for being here, and thank you for teaching us, Father. For we pray this all in the mighty name of Jesus. Amen.